We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
From the WEEI studios.
Brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified.
Let's go Celtics. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey station.
This hour of the Brian Barrett Show is brought to you by the cleanup and restoration specialists at ServPro. Call 1-800-SERVPRO.
Time now for the Brian Barrett Show on WEEI.
All right, here we go. Hope you're enjoying your Sunday. Man, beautiful early. Or I should say late morning into the early afternoon. So if you're going to a beer garden, if you're going golfing, a lot of activities today you could be doing. So I hope you are enjoying your Sunday. I'll be with you all the way up until 3 o'clock. I guess technically 4 o'clock because then we got the Red Sox pregame show coming up as they look to recover after that brutal loss last night to the Seattle Mariners. I'll get into the Celtics mainly here this afternoon, the morning into the afternoon. But I do need to scratch this itch real quickly here as it pertains to the Red Sox. This team has been playing really well. Nobody's disputing that. The rotation has been throwing the ball really well, although it is a little bit concerning that now Garrett Whitlock is on the injured list. Nathan Eovaldi is not going to make his start on Tuesday due to right hip tightness. Both those guys are dealing with issues with their hips, so that is a little bit concerning, especially considering that your rotation has been really good, especially when you went on that 7-game winning streak. But one thing is just irritating the crap out of me, and we saw last night the Red Sox need to upgrade the damn bullpen. You have this unbelievable stretch of Bobby Dalbec, where Dalbec homers on Friday and he homers again. And you're thinking to yourself last night, 6-5, let's go. They're going to win. Bobby Dalbec is going to be the hero. And then Hansel Robles is back on the mound. And Hansel Robles, I give Chaim Bloom, I give Alex Cora, and I give Dave Bush a lot of credit, because last year they said essentially the bet was, hey, we get him here and he's going to be better. Because you go back and you look at his numbers as a member of the Minnesota Twins organization, it was brutal. That guy sucked in Minnesota. The Red Sox made a bet on his talent and said, you know what? We're going to do this. He's going to throw more sliders. He's going to throw less changeup. And they were right. He was very reliable for this team down the stretch of last season into the postseason. You don't get to where you got to last year without Hansel Robles. I admit that. But this year, the reality is, this guy blows. He absolutely sucks, and it happened again last night. Hansel Robles comes into that game last night, an opportunity to win, get a save. He can't handle it. And look, Cora's got no real options right now, because this is a situation last night where Cora mentioned yesterday that Tanner Houck not ready to do back-to-back days yet. They've sort of changed his role in the bullpen. He was the bulk guy. Now he's going to be a high leverage guy. Of course, he got the save on Friday night, so he's not ready for that opportunity yet to pitch on back-to-back days. Fine. But then what is Alex Cora supposed to do? This is why I can't critique the manager. Alex Cora is one of the best tactical managers in the damn sport. Remember what he did to Kevin Cash last year in that series. He completely embarrassed him. He pantsed him. Late in the game, he was bringing in lefties so he could get Austin Meadows out of the game. So later on in the game, his righties are going to face the Rays righties. He played Kevin Cash's strength against him. The Rays, of course, an incredibly deep team, and Cora took advantage knowing what Kevin Cash was going to do. But the problem is this. It's like giving Tom Brady a team with no receivers. Alex Cora right now, and we may have seen that before, I don't know, like the 2019 season. But anyway, I digress. I don't want to do a whole Patriots thing here. But my overwhelming point is just, you're not taking advantage of having one of the best managers, one of the best tacticians in the damn game, because your bullpen's not good enough. Hansel Robles giving up rockets last night. 3 hard hit balls off the bat, 95 plus miles an hour, and a walk. What do you think's going to happen? This guy is getting absolutely clobbered this season. His hard hit rate in terms of balls off the bat, 95 plus miles an hour, is 50.8%. So more than 50% of the balls that are in play off of Hansel Robles are hard hit. Absolute missiles. He's been barreled up 7 times. The guy absolutely blows. You look at his numbers last year compared to this year with the Red Sox. That hard hit rate at 50%, over 50% this year, 39.3% last season. You look at his strikeout rate, he's not striking out anybody. He's at 17.5%. So think about this combination. And by the way, last year he's at 30.3%. Think about this combination. He's giving up rockets all the time, and he's not striking anybody out. So it's basically the recipe for an absolute disaster like we saw last night. He's not striking you out, and when you do put the ball in play, north of 50% of the time, it's going to be an absolute rocket. So now you're in a situation, if you're the Red Sox, when this guy's on the mound, you are in massive trouble. And like I said, this is not on Cora. This is on Chaim Bloom. And the reality is this for the Red Sox right now. This schedule, Angel Food Cake soft. They are playing a bunch of bad teams. Now, the Mariners a little bit better, but you get the point. You played an Angels team that fired its manager in the middle of the series, who had lost 14 consecutive games. By the way, talk about Joe Maddon. This guy is a clown show. When he got fired, he's complaining about analytics ruining baseball. Hold on, Joe. You realize that you're part of the reason analytics are all over the game? You were the first manager to really embrace it. He's really the godfather of analytics from a managerial perspective. He's the guy that first started shifting like crazy. And then he has the balls to come out and say, yeah, analytics have ruined the game. What a hypocrite that guy is. It's just the fact that, hey, man, you can't just continue to get in issues and little fights with Mike Trout. That's the reason you don't have a job and your team sucks. You're part of the problem there. And he's making it about analytics. Shut up. But anyway, I don't want to digress into a whole Joe Maddon thing. But the point being, you played the A's, you played the god-awful Angels right now. And right now you're playing a Mariners team that's not that great either. I mean, better than these teams, but they're not a great team. But the reality is the Red Sox schedule is going to get awfully difficult in the coming months. You look at what they have coming up in terms of this schedule. Now, right now, you have Oakland after this. They suck. Then you have a first-place Cardinals team, so that's a difficult series, if you will. Detroit, who stinks. You should be good after that. But then you look at this. The Guardians for three, they're decent. They're plucky. They're battling for a wild card spot. Jays for three, the sorry-ass Cubs. Then you go to Tampa for three, four with New York, four with Tampa, three with New York prior to the All-Star break. So you're talking about the Jays, the Rays, the Yankees, the Rays, and the Yankees again. So here's my thing. I can be a little bit patient with this situation. I wish they did more to address the bullpen prior to the season, but this is what I will say as it pertains to Chaim Bloom and company. There better be changes before these series open up against the Jays. Bottom line, you need to make upgrades to the bullpen before the Jays series. And look, I know it's difficult at this particular point in time to make a big trade. Usually those come closer to the trading deadline, and the sellers want to wait longer because they want to pin teams against each other, right? I acknowledge that. But you have a bunch of good young arms at the minor league level in Bayo, in Walter, in Winkowski. So they have got to figure out a way to get better guys into this whole pitching staff in general, not just starters, not just bullpen, just in general. Now, you're still waiting on Sale and you're still waiting on Paxton. But this bullpen last night, it was a reminder. They absolutely suck right now. There is no way around it. This bullpen sucks. And Chaim Bloom deserves the blame for that. There are upgrades that could come internally. They have got to figure this crap out, okay? Because you cannot go into series against the Jays, the Yankees, and the Rays next month without having upgrades to your bullpen. Bottom line, the Yankees bullpen is elite. The Rays bullpen is good. The Jays bullpen is so-so. But that's my overwhelming point, is the Yankees are an absolute wagon right now, right? They hit, they pitch, they have a good bullpen, they have a good rotation. You look at that. You have got to be able to go into that with at least a upgrade or multiple upgrades in that particular area. And I get we're waiting out the Sale and we're waiting out the Paxton thing, but they have got to be urgent with this thing because the reality is this. This Red Sox team is absolutely loaded. You can make an argument, and I have on multiple occasions, they have the best lineup in the sport. And statistically, there is an argument to be made that the Red Sox do have the best lineup in all of Major League Baseball. You cannot waste this, and especially with all these contracts looming, Bogarts and Devers and J.D. Martinez, all these contracts looming across the board, you have got to go all in for this year if you're Chaim Bloom and company. It's unfair to those guys. It's unfair to the manager if there aren't upgrades soon. And last night was just a dose of reality, quite frankly, for this organization because they had been rolling. And really, during that seven-game winning streak, the reason that you were winning all those games is, first of all, you were facing bad lineups. I mean, I'm not disputing that whatsoever, but your starters were going deep. What we saw last night is a starter in Michael Wacha that had been so great for this team. He wasn't completely sharp or wasn't really sharp, and so you needed to go to the bullpen. And a lot of these guys held up last night, but this is the problem. When you have to go to multiple bullpen arms right now, the problem is you don't have enough good ones. So, yeah, you can get away with it on some nights where, okay, Strom's good on this night and Diekman's good on this night or Schreiber's good on this night, but all it takes is one of those guys to be bad if your starter doesn't go deep into the game. And we saw what happened last night. The Hansel Robleses, the Ryan Braziers of the world. I get Barnes is on the IL, but he's been a complete disaster for this team. They have got to figure this crap out. I look at the Red Sox bullpen right now. It is an absolute dumpster fire. 13 blown saves after Robleses last night. That is tied for the most in Major League Baseball. 14 meltdowns. And just to put that into context, what that means is basically if you're adding or you're taking away from win probability, right? You're either adding to the win or you're affecting the win in a negative way. And it basically correlates in terms of the importance of the outing. Like, you don't get a meltdown or a shutdown if it's an 8-0 game in the sixth inning, right? It's just when it's an important part of the game. The Red Sox have 42 meltdowns. That's the most in baseball. That's all you have to know. They've melted down more than any other bullpen in Major League Baseball. Their hard hit rate, off the bat, 95-plus miles an hour, 41.1%. That's the fourth highest rate in all of Major League Baseball, and they have been barreled up 58 times. That's tied for the third most in Major League Baseball. Upgrade this thing now. Make changes now. Your team is good enough to make a deep run into the postseason. The lineup is actually better than it was a season ago. Don't waste this opportunity in terms of having one of the most talented teams in all of Major League Baseball because your bullpen sucks. And this is part of the calculus with Chaim Bloom. Okay, that run the Red Sox made last year in the postseason, I put that more at Alex Cora than I do Chaim Bloom. Now, look, he made the move for Robles. I get that. That certainly worked out. But that was more about in the postseason, Alex Cora working his magic, just like he did in 18 with starters coming out of the bullpen. Remember, how was their season saved against Tampa Bay? Oh, well, Chris Sale's in a situation where he did not throw the ball particularly well. They had changed Tanner Houck's role late in the season to come out of the bullpen. He saves the season in game two against Tampa. Nick Pivetta comes out of the bullpen in that series as well. That's how the Red Sox were able to manipulate and maneuver their way through the Tampa Bay Rays with Alex Cora doing what he does as one of the best tacticians in the sport. That wasn't about Chaim Bloom. That was about Alex Cora. But as we're seeing, you can't do that during the regular season. You can't use starters out of the bullpen during the regular season. Alex Cora can make adjustments when he gets into the postseason, but he can't do that right now. You need quality arms in the bullpen. Everybody else in the division values that, puts money into that particular situation. And I'm sorry, the reality is this. When Chaim Bloom has tried to pay relievers, he's screwed it up. Matt Barnes extensions. That guy has turned into an absolute pumpkin. I get he's hurt, but let's be real, he sucks. Then you look at a guy like Jake Diekman. He looks absolutely incredible some days, but then other days he's walking the damn ballpark. That's the other guy he paid. 2 years, $8 million. And this is my issue with Bloom, is he does a lot of great things. I've given him a ton of credit. Wacha, Hill, unbelievable moves. I love the Schwarber trade. Trevor Story, love that ad for the Red Sox. I like what Chaim Bloom does. I just question him as it pertains to putting together a bullpen. That's what aggravates me about Chaim Bloom, because he's really good making these moves on the periphery, but it's always a gamble with the bullpen, right? It's, hey, just like the Robles thing worked out last year. Hey, we think if we have him throw more sliders, he's going to be better. Okay, fine. Took a shot on a guy like Strom. Strom has pretty much worked out. Diekman, the reason they signed Diekman is, well, you know, he's coming off his one of his worst seasons. Walk rate was incredibly high, and the ground ball rate was the worst it's ever been. So they say, okay, we can get Diekman here. We'll fix him. Well, can you? It's an arrogant approach. It's almost Belichickian, if you will, without the resume that Belichick has, right? Belichick could be like, oh, yeah, Kyle Van Noy, second-round pick. You're wasting him in Detroit. I'll get him here. We'll get him right. And it usually worked out. But for Chaim Bloom, it's hit or miss. And I just wish they would pay for some certainty in the bullpen. And I hope the answer is going to be internal, right? They say, okay, we can bring up some of these young arms from AAA, and it solves your issue. And when Paxton and Sale come back, okay, you got a lot of depth all over the place. I hope that's the case. It's just I worry about where the Red Sox are at in terms of their schedule. They need to make changes sooner rather than later, because you're not going to be playing teams like the Oakland A's, like the Anaheim Angels forever, the Cincinnati Reds. Your schedule is going to get difficult with the Rays, the Blue Jays, and the Yankees next month. All right, 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you all the way up until 3 o'clock, and then I'll take you from 3 to 4 for Red Sox pregame as the Sox take on the Mariners, the final game of the three-game set. We'll see if the Red Sox bullpen can avoid screwing this one up today. So I just needed to scratch that itch on the Red Sox, but I do want to get into the Celtics in greater detail coming up here. So one thing I want to touch on, one thing that is alarming with the Celtics that is not the turnovers, I'll address that. Plus, Ime Udoka had some advice for Jason Tatum, and I think that Ime Udoka is completely wrong on his advice. I'll get to it next here on EEI.
Merlone, Fourier, and Mago.
Weekdays, 2 to 6.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, trending now on WEI and WEI.com. Well, the Sox fell to the Mariners 7-6 last night. Bobby Dalbec did give the Sox a 6-5 lead in the ninth, but another blown save for Hansel Robles. Man, this guy is absolutely horrible. His fourth of the season, Dylan Moore, the walk-off single for Seattle. The Sox and the Mariners play the last of their three-game set this afternoon in Seattle. 4:10 first pitch across the Shaw's and Star Market, WEI Red Sox Network. You can tune in to the Visit Massachusetts pregame show at 3:10, sponsored by the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism with yours truly. I may hit in the bullpen again in the pregame show. Robbie Ray goes for Seattle. The Sox have not announced a starter. It's going to be a bullpen day, of course. Whitlock is on the IL. My guess, and I don't know this for a fact yet, but I would guess that Cutter Crawford, oh God, who they called up is going to be the opener, if you will. The NBA Finals now tied 2-2. Game 5 Monday night in San Francisco. The C's coming off that 107-97 loss in Game 4. The Lightning clinched a spot in the Stanley Cup Final for the third straight year after a 2-1 win over the Rangers last night. And it was a pair of goals for Steven Stamkos in that one. They wrapped up that series in 6 games. The Stanley Cup Final gets underway Wednesday night. Lightning and Avalanche. Sean McDonough on the call for that. That's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is the Brian Barrett Show on WEEI.
All right, and we are with you all the way up until 3 o'clock. Fitzy, Nick Fitzy Stevens is going to join us from 12 to 1. Then we had Andy Hart from 1 to 3, and then Red Sox pregame from 3 to 4. So how concerned are you right now about your Celtics as now this series is even at 2-2? 617-779-7937, the number. And if you do want to weigh in on the Red Sox debacle last night as it pertains to the bullpen, that's on the table as well. By the way, got this text in from the 401. Robles was great until the Kiermaier walk-off. That's actually a good point. Not to say that I should be surprised. It's a good point from the texter. I'm just saying, if you do the math on that, Robles was really good up until the postseason, gives up the walk off to Kiermaier, was not the same guy after that in the postseason, and has not been the same guy this season. Now, he started off the year good in April or started off the season well in April, but the problem was a lot of the outlying periphery numbers would tell you that that was not going to hold up because, as I told you, his hard hit rate is over 50%. Eventually, he was going to get burnt with that. Okay, but I do want to get to Jason Tatum here because there's a lot been made over the past couple of days. Obviously, the turnovers, the rebounds, and then Tatum. Those, to me, have been the three biggest storylines, the rebounding, the turnovers, and Jason Tatum. So I found this interesting after the game the other night when Ime Udoka was talking about Tatum.
What are you seeing from Tatum with his struggles at the rim, in the paint?
At times, looking for fouls. You know, they are a team that loads up, and, you know, certain games, he's finding the outlets, certain shooting over 2-3 guys, and so that's the balance of being aggressive and picking your spots and doing what he's done in previous games, which is, you know, kicked it out and got wide, guys wide open looks. So that's the ongoing theme, so to speak, him getting the basket and being a scorer as well as a playmaker. And you know, they do a good job with their rotations, but sometimes hunting fouls instead of going to finish. I've seen that in a few games so far.
All right, so basically hunting fouls. And the other thing that he mentioned is he can get to his floater game and his mid-range game more, which I just completely disagree with. Now, I agree with this point about he seeks out fouls too much. That certainly is true. If you watch Jason Tatum, some of these times, and in Game 3, he didn't do it. He just got to the basket. He had that extension, if you will, on some of his layups where he was able to finish in traffic. But last game, it got back to Jason Tatum drawing fouls, or I should say attempting to draw fouls, instead of just trying to finish strong. When he's decisive and he's trying to finish strong, that's when he has the success. But Ime Udoka's idea that he needs to, it's okay to settle for a floater or his mid-range game, I just completely reject that notion. I reject that because he's not good from floater range and he's not good from the mid-range if you just look at the numbers. Last game in game four, 1 of 6 from floater range, 1 of 6 from mid-range. Those are the shots the Warriors want Jason Tatum to take. And the other thing I would mention is just the fact you look at Tatum in this series. Get ready for this one. If you're eating something, you're about to throw up. Jason Tatum from two-point territory in this series, he's 14 of 51. 27.5% from two-point territory. You know why? Because unlike what the coach is saying, he's taking too many shots from floater range and mid-range. He's not good in those particular areas, and he continues to take shots from floater range, and he continues to take shots from mid-range. Jason Tatum, second half of the season, he became an even more analytically driven player, where it's threes, it's getting to the basket, and it's getting to the free throw line. The whole idea he can be successful as a mid-range shooter and a guy from floater range, I reject that notion. He hasn't been that guy this season. You look at his numbers from floater range this season, 40.3%, not great. And then you look at mid-range, 37%. Those are not good numbers. And then you just look at it in terms of his pull-up game, right? I mean, it looks pretty when he's taking those pull-up jump shots because he's pretty damn good at them. It appears he should be good at them. But the reality is this. He's good on pull-up threes, not twos. In this series, he has taken 32 pull-up jumpers, 7 of 16 on pull-up threes. Really good. Really, really good. You know what his numbers are on pull-up twos? 0 of 16. So that whole idea, getting to the mid-range, he shouldn't be getting to the mid-range. He's not good in the mid-range. And Ime Udoka is saying he can get to the mid-range and get to his floater range. That's not good for Jason Tatum. It ain't good for Jason Tatum. By the way, we do have Ime talking about this.
You don't be opposed to taking twos, you know, some pull-up jumpers and some of those things instead of going all the way to the rim. And so it doesn't have to be either or as far as that. And then, but we talked about the balance and how much we rely on him to score and get other guys involved. And sometimes that balance leads to taking some shots or over-penetrating when he has a clean pull-up or two. So, you know, it's nothing wrong with the floater, mid-range pull-up to get yourself going, especially when the crowd is sitting there at the rim.
There is something wrong with it. There's a lot wrong with it. He's 0 of 16 on pull-up twos. Why do you want him to take more pull-up twos? He can't hit them. He shot 37% from mid-range. That's not an efficient shot. You shouldn't be promoting him, taking more of those shots, advocating for him to take more mid-rangers or more shots from floater range. He's not good at them. It may look pretty, but he's not good at them. So keep taking pull-up threes and get to the basket. That would be my advice, and stop seeking out the contact. Just try to go through the defenders. Don't worry about flailing your arms. Just go through the damn defenders. Unbelievable. I cannot believe Ime Udoka said that after the game. He's not a good mid-range jump shooter. He's 0 of 16 on pull-up threes. I don't know how much more evidence we need. He's 7 of 16 on pull-up threes. The threes are more efficient shot than a pull-up two to begin with, so keep taking pull-up threes. Don't take pull-up twos. Like, his shot chart was atrocious. He took 6 mid-rangers and 6 floaters. Those are not efficient shots, especially for guy in Tatum that shot 37% from mid-range. I hope he doesn't take the coach's advice there. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's kick it off with Dave and Lowell today. What's up, Dave?
Hello.
How you doing?
Yeah, good. I really sat through that debacle last night with the loss.
Yeah. Are you talking about the Red Sox?
Yeah. They always praise Cora, and I can name 3 or 4 things, and people should just understand. Because he speaks both languages, I don't want to sound like a bigot. He gets a free pass, and he's good with the media. But the guy isn't that good.
Well, Dave, hold on. Dave, you're saying that Cora gets a free pass because he speaks 2 languages? That's your take.
Yes,
like, you hear yourself saying that, right?
The ideal manager. You know what I'm saying.
I don't know what you're saying. You're saying he gets off the hook because he can speak 2 languages? I mean, that's an idiotic take.
He's like the media. He's the media darling. I should have just said it like that.
Because he's a really good manager. What's your problem with Cora last night, Dave?
All right. All right. I'll tell you one thing. They got this guy, Duran, that they could play. He gets
again, Dave. That's not Alex. Dave, that's not Alex Cora's decision. That's Chaim Bloom's decision. It's not Alex Cora's decision to bring up Ref Snyder.
That guy,
it's Chaim Bloom.
Isn't that good? Duran would be much more.
Franchi's been pretty good, Dave. He's been pretty good for this team since he came up.
He's 0 for 16 now. You couldn't throw that guy in there?
That's 16 at bat. Look, Dave, hold on. I agree with you that Duran should be up right now. I would give him another opportunity, especially considering that Kike Hernandez is on the IL. But I agree with you with that. But your point is directed at the wrong person. Your argument should be fired at Chaim Bloom, not at Alex Cora. Cora does not make that decision. Bloom does. So are you mad? Does Chaim Bloom speak two languages? I'd ask you that.
You're going to throw this at me like, I made a mistake with it. So it's not appropriate to, like, anytime someone says something stupid and it's not.
Well,
like,
Dave, that's just unfair. I mean, you even said I'm going to sound like a bigot when you said it.
Well, it seems like he does. He has all the things like it's like an ace in the hole. How do I say that? Because he's the type of manager nowadays. That's what they want. And you could say whatever you want about that comment, but it's true because
it helps him that he can speak two languages because there's a lot of Latin players in Major League Baseball. I agree with that. Dave, hold on. Wouldn't you also agree that he's also a good tactical manager?
All right, I'm telling you why he gets a free pass all the time. They've blown more games late, and it's starting to come back again last night. Never should have been a loss. Why doesn't Hulk pitch that inning? Or why doesn't he let the guy that
inning? Dave, Hulk was down.
All right, forget Hulk. The guy gets him out in about 12 pitches. I would have thrown him out there until he let a batter go on. Before he put that other guy in. That was pathetic. They lose, and all right, put a guy in and push him back a start to get the win, and then tonight you wouldn't even care because you got the win last night.
All right, Dave, what if they had an actual closer? Don't you think the team would be better?
Yes, but it doesn't look apparent that they're going to even attempt to get one.
Okay, well, that's my point, Dave. I've given you plenty of time, okay? I've given you plenty of time. I tried to let you – I brought up the comment because you brought it up first about Cora gets a pass because he can speak two languages. I tried to have you defend it, and you told me it's unfair to bring that back to you when you brought up the comment. So the point is Alex Cora is short in the bullpen. That's not on him. That's on the front office. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Jeff in Kingston. What's up, Jeff?
Yeah, hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm making a call about Tatum. You know, I really think he should go with his pull-up. Not because it's pretty or anything, but because when he goes to the hole and he doesn't go strong, his game is just ugly. I can't watch it. Even the coach said it. Stop hunting fouls and go strong.
Yeah, I hate that. I do hate that. I don't know why he does that, Dave, we've seen this at a couple of instances during the postseason where there are games when he does go to the basket strong and he finishes through the contact. But then there are games when he does like what he did in game 4 where he's trying to draw the foul, Jeff. And it's like, I don't know why he's so obsessed with that when if he just uses his strong body to begin with and gets to the basket, he's going to get the foul. It's going to take care of itself.
You know, he loved Kobe and I God bless Kobe. I'm not a big Kobe fan. But Kobe never did he look like that going to the hole. You know, when he's at that faking, and it's almost like he's flopping.
Yeah, he is. No, I agree with you. And you know what? The other thing that aggravates me about him, Jeff, and he's a great player, and he's a young player, and I get all that. But the other thing that aggravates me about him is when he doesn't get that call and he is obsessed with arguing with the officials about it. I that really irritates me because on multiple occasions throughout this postseason run, that has cost this team an opportunity to make a stop on the other side. And I remember vividly in the game against the Bucks where Wes Matthews gets a wide open three because Tatum actually scored. He's still looking for a foul. He gets back or he doesn't get back and they get an open three. And you know what's happened, Jeff? Because Tatum's the star of this team, it's like an epidemic on the team where a guy like Grant Williams feels like he can do the same thing.
You're right, but, you know, I have to say I'm sure the coach sees it as ugly as we do, and that's why he's saying take the pull up. Take the in the paint, stop and pull up. He's bigger than most guys that are covering him on this in this series.
Jeff, I just rather him do it from, and I appreciate the call, Jeff. I just rather him do it from three than do it from two, just from an analytical perspective. It's a more efficient shot. And even if you look at it on the season, he wasn't great from pull up twos. I reference the fact he's 0 of 16 in this particular series on pull up twos. On the season, he shot 38% on pull up twos. It's not great. Right, especially considering the fact that you can step back beyond the three-point line, and even if you shoot a lower percentage, it's a more efficient shot. So I understand Ime Udoka's point in terms of he's playing through a crowd and all that, but I would argue the other night he just played soft when he got around the basket. He didn't try to go through the defender like he was in game four, or excuse me, in game three. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to JJ. He's in Manchester. JJ, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, brother? How are you?
I'm doing well.
Awesome, awesome. First of all, let me get to Dave from Lowell. Whenever you preface a call with or a statement with, I don't want to sound like a bigot, most likely you're a bigot. Okay, that's for you. That's for you, Dave. That's
I'm with you,
Dave,
JJ.
From Lowell. All right, that's for Dave from Lowell. I've been living in the Northeast my whole life. Not a Southern state or anything, but we do have our pockets of issues here. Other than that, let's move on to the Boston Red Sox. Leave the manager alone. He's fine. He's a great manager. He's already won a World Series here. He makes great decisions. It is a Heimblum issue, which you're going to talk about staffing on the team and bringing up players or putting down players. That's a Heimblum issue.
Yeah.
Now I want to get to the Boston Celtics. I know I'm going pretty fast here.
That's all right,
Boston Celtics, right now the issue is consistency. We're having a Jason Tatum issue with consistency. The other teammates as well, Al Horford, consistency as well. Jaylen Brown, pockets of greatness, and then he'll go cold. All around, they're getting away from that thing that really got him here, which is that team element. Everyone has to put in, has to play better. Obviously, when you're looking at the amount of turnovers, I believe it was like 9 missed free throws. That's not a winning combination to win a championship.
Yeah.
And I'll let you take it from there. Hey, right. Dave, don't be a racist.
Thanks for the call, JJ. It's a great point. If you prefer someone saying, I don't want to sound like a bigot, you're probably going to sound like a bigot. The other thing I'll say, there's a lot of meat on the bone there with JJ's call. So let's address the Red Sox thing first. Yes, this is a Heimblum problem as it pertains to the bullpen. It's not an Alex Cora problem. I can count on about one hand the issues I've had with Alex Cora tactically. One of them would be, the only thing I can think of vividly is Chris Sale last year in the series against the Astros when, of course, he let him pitch the third time to Alvarez. He said after the game that essentially they liked the lefty-on-lefty matchup. Well, the problem is that Alvarez had already hit one over the monster the opposite way and one off the monster. But that's so it didn't make sense to go back. If that was your feeling before the game, fine, but you got to adjust your thought process as you see it play out. And Alvarez can be late and still hit one over the monster, right? He's one of the best power hitters in the sport. So I disagree with Cora on that. Other than that, Cora is pretty much spot on with most of the decisions he makes. I would blame Heimblum for the bullpen issue. I don't know how you can blame Cora. And the Duran thing that was brought up, that's not Cora's decision either. That's the front office's decision. Cora doesn't make those decisions. I agree with Dave's point about bringing up Duran. I would like to see Duran here. I don't need to see Ref Snyder. Duran's a 25-year-old guy that's in AAA. Like, at some point, you got to figure out what you have in the kid. Give him a runway at the major league level. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Owen in Westford. What's up, Owen?
Hey, how are you?
Doing well.
I just a little thing. It's kind of comparing, I don't know how many people are, what's-his-face, Tatum to Kobe Bryant. No matter how good Tatum gets, no matter what he does, he'll never come close to Kobe Bryant. I don't think so. I think he'll be a good, solid player for years to come. But as good as Kobe Bryant, no way. No way. That's all. Have a good day.
All right, Owen. I guess he's not going to be as good as Kobe. All right. Kobe's one of the, 20 greatest players of all time. Now, I believe Kobe is slightly overrated. He's definitely not the best player of his era. That would be Tim Duncan. His first 3 championships, he was the second best player. He's a great player. I'm not diminishing that. But not as efficient as you would like to see from the greatest players of all time. Like, he's not even in the neighborhood of LeBron James to me when it comes to efficiency, not even the neighborhood of Michael Jordan when it comes to efficiency. So 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Matt in Rhode Island. Hey, Matt.
Hey, what's up, Barrett? Now, as long as you brought that up, I it is a little troubling with Tatum. I'm trying to understand where he's coming from with this. You know, obviously he trained under Kobe. Kobe's his favorite player, but he just doesn't have, like, you know, he doesn't have that Mamba mentality. I really wish he did. You know, maybe he will, but he's a great player. But when you disappear late in games, like, I just don't understand how he wants to be like that, but, you know, he's just not that guy. But anyway, the reason why I called is it's like the third and fourth quarters, like specifically the last like 8 minutes of the fourth quarter, the last game was just really troubling. When everything just, the ball stops moving.
Yep.
You know, Marcus, he was putting up shots, but, you know, I don't really blame him because, you know, when the offense breaks down, he's the point guard, and, you know, he's got to make something happen. It was troubling to see how they played the last 8 minutes of that game.
Yeah, Matt, and you bring up an interesting point as it pertains to Tatum, and I appreciate the call as always, my friend. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. So we did see that mentality from Tatum in this postseason on a couple of occasions. You think about the fact that he went into Giannis's house, 46 big ones. I mean, that's huge. I mean, he outplayed Giannis in his house. He had 16 points in the fourth quarter to save the season. But you don't see it consistently enough in these close games. And you look at it in terms of the postseason in clutch games, which means the final 5 minutes when the game's within 5 points. The Celtics in those clutch games are 7-5, but during the regular season, they really struggled. They were 13-22. That was 29th in terms of the winning percentage. And Tatum in those clutch moments was not particularly good. He shot 8% from 3-point territory during that stretch. So the reality is they do need to have that. He's 2-for-25. And 29 of 78 from the field in clutch situations this year. That was 37.2%. Now, in the postseason, less opportunities, of course, but it would be nice to see Tatum take over one of these games late. Like the other night, it's a close game down the stretch. That was a clutch game, right? Game within 5 minutes with within 5 points. You know what the Celtics were down the stretch of that game? Game four, 0-for-6, 0 points. That's when your best player needs to come through. I'm all for him sharing the ball and all that. But at the end of the game, your best player needs to show up. Steph Curry did. Tatum didn't. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until 3 o'clock. So, a lot of Celtics on the table. If you do want to weigh in on the Red Sox, they blew an opportunity to win a game last night in Seattle because the bullpen sucked. What do the Red Sox have to do in the next couple of weeks here to get ready for these Yankees, Rays, and Blue Jays series? That's on the table. Do you have an issue with the way Chaim Bloom has constructed this bullpen? And as it pertains to the Celtics, what is their biggest issue right now, and what do you need to see from their superstar, Jason Tatum? Brian Barrett with you on EEI.
Now, more of the Brian Barrett Show on WEEI.
All right, and we are with you up until 3 o'clock. Nick Fitzy Stevens. Fitzy, you all know him. He's going to join us from 12 to 1, then Andy Hart from 1 to 3, and then we'll get you for Red Sox pregame from 3 to 4 as the Red Sox look to win another series. Had an opportunity to really clinch the series last night. Unfortunately, Hansel Robles in the bullpen was absolutely crappy in that particular game, and he continues to be horrible this season. So now they're going to have to do it the final game of this series, which really stinks because of the fact that Whitlock is on the IL, so this is a bullpen game. So you really needed to win that game last night, and you couldn't get it done because Hansel Robles gave it up. And unfortunately, Bobby Dalbec was tremendous, hits the home run, second consecutive game with a home run, and you find a way to blow it in the ninth inning. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Drew. He's in Boston. Hey, Drew.
Hey, so I'm wondering at what point we're going to see Chaim Bloom finally let go. This roster construction is abysmal. We watched them melt down in the late innings last year in the playoffs. How many times, and it's what cost us the ALCS, and he did not only nothing to address it, he brought in just garbage, like slop. Absolute slop. They didn't improve the first base position, which has been a glaring need now for over a season. They have no right-handed outfield depth. It's just such a bad roster with so many warts that the only reason we're even in the position we are is because there's such a deficit of good teams in the American League that as soon as we get to the playoffs, all those warts are going to come to light and we're going to get smashed.
So you think it behooves the Red Sox to move on from Bloom right now, Drew?
Yeah, 100%, because all you're doing is continuing the damage. If you don't stop the bleeding now, it's only going to get worse. If somebody continues to make bad decision after bad decision, it's only going to get
worse.
But,
Drew, I think that's unfair. I think it's fine to, if you want to look at, I know you brought up first base as well. If you want to look at the bullpen and criticize Chaim Bloom, I think that's fair. But you do have to look at the full calculus of this, right? I mean, think about the fact that they got Nick Pivetta for Heath Embry and Brandon Workman. They signed Waka to a cheap deal. They signed Rich Hill to a cheap deal. Kike Hernandez was huge for this team last year. So I don't think you can just look at it and say, Chaim Bloom made bad decision after bad decision. He's made a lot of good decisions too, Drew, so that's unfair.
Kike Hernandez hit for 1 week, okay? His back of the baseball card was what he gave you last year, which is about a 240 hitter. So let's not get crazy.
Drew, last year he was legitimately one of the best defensive center fielders. Drew, he was one of the best center fielders in Major League Baseball last year defensively by the metrics. I mean, that's not made up. He was legitimately one of the best center fielders in the sport.
That's, I mean, you're looking at about 25% of what you need from an outfielder. The offensive production is really where the value comes in. Nobody hires
Yeah, you're right. Center field defense. On the All-Star team. Center field defense is not important. I'm with you.
Who wanted JBJ here? Nobody. And guess what? He's one of the best defenders in the league, so it proves my point. Okay? He can't hit the baseball. That's a big part of playing the game of baseball.
Dave, he's been hitting over like, by the way, this is the wrong time to make the Jackie Bradley Jr. argument. Jackie Bradley Jr. has actually been scorching. So you could have made that argument like a couple of weeks ago. It would have been germane to the conversation. But right
he
now
does
it makes
it every year for a month.
Okay, but why are you making that argument right now?
Historically.
So you want to just sign Hunter Renfroe long term? Like Renfro's not that good of a player. And what they did is they bought prospects.
Sign him long term? No, but you had him under contract for a cheap deal, and a guy who gave you 26 home runs versus either of the guys you're mentioning give you squat at the end of the year. I mean, if you want to make a bet, I'll do it with charity, and you can look at who has a better season, Renfroe or the other two bums that we have on the team.
But Drew, the trade is not for Jackie. Drew, you do acknowledge that, right? Hold on, Drew.
For nothing.
Drew, let's have a back and forth here. You do acknowledge that the trade isn't for Jackie, right?
Excuse me?
You do acknowledge that they didn't trade Renfroe for Jackie.
They made room for one with the other.
No, that's not what they did, Drew. The reason that Jackie Bradley Jr. is here,
that's
he was
literally what they did. They
no, no, Drew, no, Drew, Drew, no, 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 Drew. You're misconstruing exactly what happened in the trade. The reason that they
Renfroe played right field, JBJ plays right field. Let's right. Be honest with one another.
Okay, Drew. But you know why they made the trade. Why did they make the trade?
Yeah. Bums who will never be anything.
Oh, okay. So you know that. Okay. So you know they're never going to be good. Okay. The reason that the Red Sox made the trade for Jackie Bradley Jr. was not for Jackie Bradley Jr. It was for the prospects, Alex Pinellas. That's why they made the trade. A third round pick a couple of years ago. That's why they made the pick, or the trade rather. It wasn't to get Jackie Bradley Jr. over Hunter Renfroe. Stop. That's not what they did. And by the way, now, I would have liked them to add another outfielder in the offseason as well. I thought they were going to go after Suzuki. They did. They didn't land him. Now, I wish they had added another outfielder. They didn't do that. But the overwhelming point is this. That was actually a big market move because of the fact that you took on Jackie Bradley Jr.'s salary. It was actually a big market deal to take back a perceived bad contract to buy a prospect. That's what the Red Sox did. So, look, I'm with you with the Chaim Bloom situation as it pertains to the bullpen. I completely acknowledge, and I said this, I wrote an article about it, one of my two great articles for WEEI.com. I wrote about the fact that the bullpen market in the offseason was stacked and the Red Sox needed to add to the bullpen, and they didn't do it. I criticized Chaim Bloom over and over and over again about that. I've said it multiple times, I don't know if he can build a capable bullpen. But I do know that a lot of the other moves that Chaim Bloom has made worked. Trading for Schwarber worked. That guy was the best bat that moved at the trading deadline last year. Trading for Nick Pivetta worked. Signing Waka worked. Signing Rich Hill worked. Signing Trevor Story has been a good move for the Red Sox. If you look at it by the numbers, he's been one of the best second basemen from a defensive perspective in all of baseball, and we know what he can do from a power perspective. Yeah, the average is never going to be there. There's going to be some swing and miss stuff, but I'll take that out of my second baseman any day of the week. Now, a lot's going to be made in terms of what he does in the future with the Devers, with Bogarts, and all that. I acknowledge that. But to fire Chaim Bloom right now, I mean, that just, to me, makes no sense whatsoever. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you up until 3 o'clock, and then we'll take you until Red Sox pregame. Fitzy's going to join us. Nick Fitzy Stevens from 12 to 1. Andy Hart's going to be with us from 1 to 3. Oh, I did want to mention this real quickly because we got this from a texter. Jason Tatum has shot 52.4% from two-point land this season. That's what Ime is referring to get him a rhythm. Okay, I acknowledge that is true, but the reality is this. Do you know where the majority of those shots come from and the efficiency come from? The restricted area. So if you look at Jason Tatum's made twos this season, 61% of them came in the restricted area. 61% of them. So those other two-pointers that he takes, he's not good at. He's not good from floater range. On the season, just 40.3%. From the mid-range, 37%. When he gets to the basket this season, and it was actually better after January 1st, 68% in the restricted area. So a lot of that in terms of his two-point field goal percentage is skewed by the restricted area. That's why I said get to the basket, take threes, get to the free throw line. Don't settle for mid-rangers. Don't settle for floaters, because the reality is Jason Tatum is not good at floaters, and he's not good for mid-range. That's my whole point. And he shot 38% on pull-up twos this season. I much rather him step back and take pull-up threes. Like, he's been really good on pull-up threes in this series, 7 of 16. That's my point. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you up until 3 o'clock. All right, we'll get more into the Celtics. Apparently, Fitzy's got some sort of comparison he wants to make from the Patriots run to the Celtics team. So we'll get into that. Oh, and one other big time concern with this team going forward. We'll address it next here on EEI.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.